Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, you're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com, or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we explore a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I think we have another first tonight. This might be, I think, the first time we've done live shows two nights in a row. I know we've done pre-recorded things where we pre-recorded things one night after another, especially during the World Transformed. But I think this might be the first time we've done two live shows back to back like this. Pretty cool. We ought to
That's
have fun
pretty
time.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's one of the few live 90-minute shows that we've done, but actually back in the early days we did quite a few of those, so this isn't that unusual in that regard. But we had such a terrific show last night with Ramez Nam talking about his book. That one could have gone on for 90 minutes easily, couldn't it?
Oh yeah, it was a shame to have to say goodbye to him so quickly, because if we'd have gone longer, we'd have been tempted to spoil more, and the book is just too good to spoil. Everybody should run out and get a copy of that. I had a free advance copy, so do you, Phil. I went ahead and bought a copy. I'll probably buy another copy to give away at Christmas time or something. It's that good. Encourage everybody to try out Nexus. It's a great book.
Well, you know, the book, or if you can get a hold of the drug. I think we ended up 2 for 3 on saying actually try the Nexus drug. Was that where we ended up?
Well, that's still in beta version. I don't know that I recommend that just yet.
I'm usually a late adopter of technology, but I don't know. There's an awful lot there. Well, we've got a huge show tonight. This is one of the biggest topics we've ever taken on. Is that fair to say? And we take on some big ones.
Yeah, it doesn't get much bigger than the end of the world. I mean, that's pretty much it, right?
You know, that's all she wrote, if you will. And the termination of the Mayan calendar has given us the perfect pretext for discussing that this evening. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to getting into it. I think there's a lot to be said on a serious note about the end of the world, and I think obviously we can have some fun with it too. It occurred to me, Stephen, I know you're probably not prepared for this, but it occurred to me that this whole show is almost kind of one big long Tales of the Paranormal.
Yeah, it is. Maybe I should find that sound effect and have it queued up, because we'll have some opportunity to roll that out during the show, perhaps. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm giving you a fair warning on.
Okay.
At some point, if it starts to feel like a Tales of the Paranormal, you're going to have to find that. It's in the list there someplace.
Since,
right?
Yeah, since I'm running the switchboard, anytime it seems a little paranormal to me, I think I will play that. How's that sound?
You know what? You're the man with the controls. So just make yourself comfortable. Well, we are not alone this evening. We've got we've got a couple of good friends with us, and joining us as a special guest co-host is our very good friend PJ Manning. PJ needs no introduction on this program. She's a writer. She's a futurist. She's the official Hollywood correspondent to Fast Forward Radio, And she has chosen, I'm very touched by this, chosen to spend her last few hours on this planet with us. So, PJ, welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Thank you, Phil and Stephen. I would have it no other way.
Us either, awesome. You know? It's like, what are you going to do? Friends, family? No. I mean, it's got to be the Fast Forward Radio.
It has to be you boys, yes.
There it is. I'm deeply touched, deeply moved, to the point that Stephen and I might even think about singing again tonight.
No.
Now that would touch me deeply.
Oh, gosh.
In fact, that could be why they ended the calendar. It could be that they needed it sometime after midnight, but that was at least a possible thing to have happen. So how are you, PJ?
I'm very well, thank you. Looking forward to the holidays, you know, kids finishing finals. We're ready to party.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, we've got some partying to do, assuming we get through the next, what is it actually, the next hour and a half, the next couple hours, the next 24 hours? When are we out of the woods on this thing? I think to answer that, we should bring on our guest this evening, and we're very pleased to have him back with us. You know, this gentleman is not just any run-of-the-mill science comedian, but he is the world's premier science comedian, and we're thrilled to have him with us once again. Brian Mallow, welcome back to Fast Forward Radio.
It's good to be back.
Well, we always love chatting with you, and we've sent you out to the East Coast on assignment, assuming that the that the doomsday would begin there.
Well, there you go. So because of this, you guys are all on the West Coast, and December 20th is ending. While for me here on the East Coast is ending while we're still on the air. So
that was the whole plan. I mean, the way we got it pictured. Have you ever seen Cloverfield?
I did not see it. I saw parts of it.
Okay. Well, if you've seen the trailer, there's the scene where something horrible is going on. They're in New York, obviously in lower or midtown Manhattan, I guess lower. And they're in a high rise building. You hear some terrible sound, and then they look out the, there's a balcony of this high-rise building. They look down the street, and suddenly the Statue of Liberty's head comes rolling down the street. So we've got you there. It kind of was our first wave. But, we figure whatever big stuff happens, you're going to be there to see it, and you'll report on it.
If it starts right at the beginning of the 21st, I'll let you know. But it is a little odd to me that I guess I'm the only person who's not a co-host. Does it take this many hosts to host me on your show, or am I just like, why is everyone else on the show a co-host and I'm the odd man out?
Well, there's a couple of reasons for that, but I think it goes down. It ultimately comes down to the whole student teacher ratio. The schools are better if you have a higher number of teachers per student. So we want to be the best show we can. So we figure if the hosts outnumber the guests 3-1, we just
I think in the future everyone will be a host. Oh, I'm sorry, if there is a future. That's
right. A great
prediction. Exactly.
That's a great prediction. Well,
everyone will have their 15 minutes as the host of a show.
Exactly. The other reason is that PJ has hosted the show several times. So we often have you on as a guest, but then sometimes you're a host. I don't know. You're living kind of a double life here on Fast Forward Radio. How do you feel about that?
A guest, a host, a guest. As long as you keep calling, boys.
Okay. All right. Well, we will. You don't have to. As long as the world is here. So, we've got some fun topics. We've got some more serious topics. I think we'll mix it up as we go. I don't know, did PJ, I know you saw the joke I posted on Facebook about,
yes, I did.
This is actually a tribute to you, Brian. And I emailed that to you yesterday.
Oh yes, I saw the joke.
Oh, got that. Stephen, did you get a chance to see that? A mind walks into a bar?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well, then if everyone's already familiar with that one, I won't tell it, but I actually have another one. I've always wondered, where do jokes come from? I mean, I know that there are professional comedians and comedy writers who write funny material, But, you know, this, like in the workplace and somebody just cracks a joke that's topical, I always wonder, well, did they get that off somebody from a TV? Somebody else told that? Is there some person who just, like, sits in their basement and makes up jokes?
You know, I got to tell you, Phil, I've always, and even before I was a comedian, I think I always wondered about that myself, about, because sometimes some jokes that just make the rounds completely unattributed are quite brilliant. And you go, who, you know, the one that always comes to mind is that it's a little silly, but it's what did the Zen Buddhist say to the hot dog vendor? Make me one with everything. So, you know, that joke did not make itself. I can sooner believe that the universe created itself out of nothing for no reason than that I would believe that that joke created itself. And it's a very clever pun. And yet, it's been out there for years. Someone made it up, and they've never been attributed to them.
It's a mystery, or at least it was, because now I've made one up, and I put it on Facebook, and somebody shared it today, and I think, wow, and somebody might hear that and then tell it, and then it could come back to me eventually. Probably won't.
Exactly.
It's not got that kind of legs, I don't think, but it's like the origin of the joke, you know. Okay, so anyway, I've got this other one. Now, this one is partly made up, all right? I've actually taken another joke, and I've co-opted it for the event. Brian, you're a professional. How does that count? Is that valid or?
Well, let me hear the joke before I give a ruling.
Very wise.
I think that's fair. Okay, so there's this Mayan, and he's married to an Inca woman. It's a mixed marriage, but you know things have gone pretty well for them. And he comes home one night, and he's very upset, and he says, "Darling, I'm so sorry. There's something that I should have told you a long time ago, and I've been putting it off. And I haven't told you, but this is the end of the world today. Tomorrow is December 21st, 2012, and according to our calendar and our prophecies, our beliefs, it's the end of the world." And she is terrified, and she says, "Oh no, I'm going to die. We're all going to die." And she says, "Oh no," he says, "Actually, there's been a big misunderstanding about that. It's just the Mayans who are going to die. We're all going to die." But, you know, we'll transcend up to another spiritual plane or something probably. So, don't worry too much. And she said, "But I'm going to miss you so much." And he said, I'm going to miss you too, but hey, let's make the best of it. I'll tell you what, let's make a night of it. We'll go out, we'll have dinner, we'll go dancing, we'll have cocktails, we'll come back here and we'll make love till sunrise." And she says, "Yeah, that's fine. That's easy for you to say. I have to get up tomorrow."
I like it, Phil. That's great.
Now, I mean, I'm sorry, but that's how Incas were, okay? That's the way they were. But, you know.
You do bring up an interesting point about the whole apocalypse and everything, that it's interesting to me that the Mayans themselves, here we are talking about this end of the world, they didn't even come close to making it to this end of the world.
They were gone long before the end of the world. They're proposed.
So the world ended for them. If it were indeed a prediction for the end of the world, they were overly optimistic, thinking that they would be here at 2012.
Exactly, yeah. Although, you know, I decided to do some extensive research into this subject leading up to tonight. So I watched a movie on Netflix. And it was called 2012 Science or Superstition,
mm-hmm.
And they were coming down very clearly on the science side.
Oh, really?
So actually, some of it was really interesting because they started talking about there's this book called The Dresden Codex. It was a Mayan text that was only recently discovered. And in fact, there are prophecies around how the world will end, and they are tied to the end of the calendar. So this whole, you know, one of the sets of jokes going around is that all that's happening is the calendar is ending. You know, calendars end all the time and the world doesn't end. But apparently there was a whole belief system amongst the Mayans that the world would end on this date. And it was based on a really elaborate astronomical cyclical understanding of how the universe works. I've lost where I was going with this. What were we talking about?
The show that came down on the side of science or superstition.
I'm watching this thing and I realize that there is at least some backstory to this, and that's kind of interesting, and it makes you respect the Mayans because they were brilliant astronomers to have come up with such an elaborate calendar. But yeah, the scientists, I never saw any credentials for anyone. They were all authors of books, but the scientists who were talking about this, they let us know how we would know that this was going to happen. And it's interesting because apparently this movie was made a couple, 3 years ago. But here's what you can look for, okay? Throughout 2012, sunspot activity is going to get worse and worse, or excuse me, solar flare activity is going to get worse and worse until finally there will be a huge conflagration tomorrow. But by now, as you've seen, it's gotten really out of hand and really bad. So... you know, it's fun. It's fun watching a movie that is called 2012 and is already like well past its shelf life. You know,
right. I mean, I think there were a couple good flares. I think Phil Plait just posted some of his favorite astronomy picks from this year, and one of them was a pretty awesome. I don't know if it's a solar flare or coronal mass ejection, whatever it is. It's one of those things that I always wish that a picture of the Earth was superimposed to scale so that you could see, because these big arcing flares and masses of plasma are a couple hundred times bigger than the Earth. It is just inconceivable. But nothing that threatened the Earth.
Nothing has come close to threatening the Earth, whereas in the documentary they were saying that by now we would have had massive damage already, and basically we would have just been finished off tomorrow. So,
but what is this attachment to the Mayan calendar?
Say again, PJ?
What is this attachment to the Mayan calendar? Why the Mayans? Why do we care? Is it because their calendar ends?
I think it's because their calendar ended on a date that we're experiencing right now. You know, it was an end of the world that showed up in time for us. But that raises an interesting question. Let me flip that around and ask you a question, PJ. Why are people so interested in the end of the world? What is so compelling about that subject that people join crazy cults and sell all their stuff and get ready to be swooped up into heaven? Is it a mental illness? Is it something that's wired into our brains? Why are we fascinated?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we react to fear much better than we react to happiness or joy. Fear goes directly to that amygdala man and goes nuts. I think that people constantly look for what are they scared of and how can they avoid it. When it comes to the end of the world, depending on your belief system, different things could happen. And it might be a better situation than you're in right now. So if you have those kinds of beliefs, if you think that the end of the world actually might be your one-way ticket to a better existence, then why the hell not?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But, certainly for the people who join the cult, I can understand that. But you look at how much just kind of popular interest there has been in this topic. It's like it has a hold on our imagination somehow.
But I don't think it's just now. I think we have this fascination with calendars as though numbers have actual meaning. So of course there's this millennial. From the Christian calendar, we have this millennial fascination with the end of the world, and there are always groups that attach themselves to the world will end in 1,000, the world will end in 2,000. Y2K, which was hilarious because it was really just about computers not being able to date themselves properly, took on a greater meaning than it would have, I believe, if it had been, computers might trip on their date in 2087. There is this need to believe for some people that an end is coming. I think life is hard for many people, and I think it's very confusing. I think part of it is future shock. And again, part of it is that desire for something better, easier, happier, or just over.
Hmm. Yeah. On to the next thing. And Brian, it sounded like you were going to say something too.
Oh, yeah. Just that, as you say, this isn't a new phenomenon. People have been proclaiming, I'm not even going to say predicting, but proclaiming the end of the world for about as long as there has been a world. And what was the one, was it this past April or a year ago?
Yes.
The religious guy that had the date that he said the world was going to end. And I think some people actually acted on that. I think some people believed him and maybe separated from some of their possessions and must have been disappointed when it didn't end.
Well, and so easily attached themselves to the next date. And he says, oh, I miscalculated. Here's
right.
the new no. date. And he so easily said, oh, okay, oh, dear, he just miscalculated. I'm attaching myself to the new date.
You know, it's amazing. I read in my preparation for the show, PJ, I read the list of dates or predictions for the end of the world, basically from the beginning of the era till now. And it's amazing how many of these dates, the source is from the same person. You've got, three, four, five dates, all predicted by the same, prophet or whatever. And apparently it was a big enough deal that it got, it got some following each time, It seems to me like you get one shot at this end of the world thing,
Yeah.
You just get one shot. That's all you get.
The boy who cried Armageddon.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly.
But apparently you can keep crying it.
Yeah. And people will keep believing you.
If at first you don't succeed, try
it. I would love to try something. I don't know for sure that you'll be able to hear this, but I'm currently living in Raleigh. I'm in Massachusetts right now. I'm visiting my wife's family, and her sister has a son who is about 13, and she got a voicemail yesterday that we got a big kick out of. It was, I guess it went out to every parent at the school. It was an automated message, and I think you should hear it because it's on topic. So if this works, I think you'll be able to hear. I'm going to crank it up, and it's very short. It's about 20 seconds, and here we go.
All right.
A second announcement concerns student workers. Many students in the 7th and 8th grade have been talking about the end of the world. Please be aware of these discussions. Please reinforce that there is school on Friday and that they are safe. Thank you. Good night.
Were you able to hear that?
Yes, the priority was there.
That there's been rumors that the world is going to end, but please reinforce that there will be school on Friday.
Yeah, and, they're safe. Right? Point two, less important, but yes, don't worry. Yeah, you're safe. But the most important thing is there will be school on Friday.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy that it's come to this, that even an announcement like that, that they felt like they had to call people and tell them that?
That really is amazing. And that was sent out by the school district.
Yeah. Yesterday.
Amazing.
Now I Stephen, now I feel like we shouldn't have this show. I feel like we're just feeding into this whole thing.
But we're laughing at it. I do sometimes think, like, what if, first of all, things could happen. There are things that could threaten life on this planet and what if coincidentally it coincided with this prediction? That would be pretty amazing. And we're laughing. I kept thinking that we're sort of like the band that kept playing as the Titanic went down.
Who's the guy in Vegas, the bookmaker, who would make all that money?
Yeah.
The guy who took the long odds.
Yeah, but he's kind of like the mind in my bet, right? In my joke,
Exactly.
There's no way to really benefit economically from,
Right.
Brian brings up a really great point of, there are other ways of interpreting the end of the world than we may actually, in fact, be experiencing it. What about the notion of the singularity? That's a kind of end of the world. Some people think we've had the singularity already and we just haven't noticed.
What kind of singularity is that if we're not even...
It's a very quiet singularity.
If some people were singularity and no one came.
Yeah,
basically, there's some sentient computer.
Manhood.
I was going to say, there's some sentient computer somewhere who's having a really good laugh right now.
Right, it's hiding out in the circuitry. It could be here, in into this, wherever there's electricity.
Hey, before I lose track, I'm supposed to be reporting on our competition that we had over on the Speculist blog, which was folks emailed in their responses to the question, what are your plans for the end of the world? And I'm going to share some of those right now. I was planning on judiciously spacing 10 of them out over the 90-minute show, but I see we're already 25 minutes in and I haven't done any. So that math being too hard, I'm just going to do three right now. Does that sound right to everybody?
Yeah.
Cool.
Sure.
All right. I'm going to randomly pick.
Can I ask you if the thing that reminded you of that, because what I saw, someone didn't really make it, Tom did not really make a prediction, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Charles Strauss book, Singularity Sky, but
sure,
that's a reference to, he said, to the eschaton and Terence McKenna. I was wondering if that was your segue, if that's what reminded you of this, because of the singularity mention. Eschaton is what the singularity consisted of. It is the name of the thing that came alive.
Right. No, that's right. Actually, that didn't bring me to that segue. But I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, that's just I only just read the book, and I think it's pretty amazing. Charlie Strauss. I'm a big fan, and Singularity Sky. I wanted more of it, but the eschaton is this ominous, interesting thing. It is something that becomes self-aware. You don't really know that much about it, but the parts that are about it are amazing. But it's a great post-singularity book.
But the eschaton, the eschaton is actually the Greek for the apocalypse. That's actually that's the word used in, I believe, in Revelations. It's the eschaton.
Right. It means the end of the world. And in fact, I was reading it to mean that. I didn't make the Charlie Strauss connection there. But
this guy didn't either.
He didn't capitalize it. So, Tom, if you're in the chat room, we're desperately trying to understand your entry, which made it to the finals. Even though we don't really understand, and you asked that, it was a good point you made, that he didn't say what he was going to do with his. I just got a kick out of his, and it was the only one that wasn't a prediction that became a finalist. So Tom, you're unique amongst all the candidates, even if you don't win. And there are no losers here on Fast Forward Radio, of course, but there are people who won't get prizes. I think it's an important.
Oh, but you have to love the combination of apocalypse and psychedelic hallucinogenic philosophers.
Yeah,
there's got to be some good stuff in there.
Yeah, to the eschaton and Terence McKenna. It's a wonderful response.
That's what he would make his final toast.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now others gave more in line with the assignment answers, and let me share this one from Anonymous. I really enjoyed this one too. I've had many thoughts about what I was going to do on end of the world day, since I learned about what people believed and the whole media hype that would invariably happen. Most of said plans involved going to a nearby town steeped in hippie and new age culture, lovely place if a bit tiring, and just seeing how people were behaving. However, I'll have to do that on the day before and the day after instead. On Friday, I've got a prior commitment, which I'm sorry, as soon as we get into this paragraph. This is the only multi-paragraph answer we got. I'm already like, oh, okay, well, thank you for your explanation on this. I've got a prior commitment which I agreed to before I realized what date Friday would be, the local lantern festival. December 21st and the predicted end of the world will see me carrying a lantern in the shape of a 1.5-meter mink whale with an airship gondola hanging from its belly through the park and down the high street along with a small cross-section of the rest of the town's population.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
I'm sorry, Stephen, say again.
I said, hey, me too.
That was Stephen's plan. She stole your plan. The reason this one's a finalist is because the world must go on so that this can occur.
Absolutely.
I read that, and I think we've got to have the meter-and-a-half mink whale with the airship gondola hanging from its belly. Anyway, Anonymous, you are not going to win simply because we don't know who you are. We would have no way of giving you a prize. But thank you for the wonderful answer. I really enjoyed that. And so we'll do one more. Stephen, do you have one from the list you'd like to share?
Yeah, Carl Finley says, I won't be wasting any money on Christmas presents this year. Here's the thing. Carl, if you're wrong, you still got time, man. Get to the mall this weekend, and, everybody be happy. Then you can surprise everybody with Christmas presents anyway. You still have time. So,
Carl, if you're Amazon Prime, it's still half a day of free second-day delivery.
That's right. But it sounds to me like Carl was just trying to find a way to excuse his cheapness.
Exactly.
Well, I don't think he wanted to spend any money this Christmas.
It could be. That could very well be. Carl, if you're in the chat room, you may try to defend yourself at this point. But we've found a secret motive behind your answer, and we're not liking it that much. It's got a Scrooge feel to it. So now that we've done a few of those ourselves, let's take this as a panel. Let's say that it wasn't this, but it was a serious answer it was a serious scenario for the world ending. And we've had shows where we talked about this, and there are ways that we could know that the world was going to end. Chances are you won't know ahead of time if it's a big, like, cosmic ray explosion or if the solar flare were to occur. We might not have an awful lot of warning for it. But there are other scenarios. A big meteor's coming, and there's nothing we can do about it, things like that, where you might actually have a week or a month or a year or two to plan. Let's say that we knew the end of the world was going to be any particular date. I don't know, March 3rd of 2013. What would you do? What would you do between now and then? What would you do leading up to the end of the world? How would your life be different? And that is such an unfair and unreasonable question, Stephen. I have to start with you on that, I think. It's only right.
I suspect that I would work less, spend more time with my family, and see if I could do fast forward radio 3 or 4 times a week with you. You know, do fun stuff. I mean, if I'm going to answer the question seriously, I would say I would seek to do less work and be more and have more fun. I guess is the main thing.
All right. Great answer. PJ, how about you?
I would agree. I would have lots more fun with my family. I would go try to have as many crazy experiences as I could have. And I would go out with a bang, maybe not with an Eschaton and Terrence McKenna, but some kind of a bang.
Maybe, but you only said maybe not.
I would have as fun as possible a time with my family.
I could see
PJ doing a skydive. I could see that happening.
Oh, hey, I bungee jumped, so skydiving would just be next.
Yeah,
it's funny that you would say that because I don't know if I can jump in here just because of that segue that Stephen just provided me.
I figured as much, but you have to answer as well.
I was recently asked by the News and Observer, which is the newspaper in Raleigh. They asked some people that they called arts and culture figures. And what they were looking for was sort of arts and culture answers so that you could say, well, these are the things I would want to experience for the last time if the world was ending next week. They were actually asking. And they were looking at it as basically it's a way of saying, here's some stuff. It's like making arts recommendations to the readers. So they were kind of specifically looking for that. But the first thing I said is that I wouldn't do anything too risky like skydiving because I'd hate to come this close to the end of the world and then miss it. so, So all of a sudden, it's like you know what I mean? Like, I took a different take on that. It's like, I'm not doing anything risky now because I don't want to miss whatever this is going to be.
Yeah, I can see that. Actually, that's a really good point. And it goes to the whole, you know, why when people think that they don't have much time left to live, does it suddenly become reasonable to do all these risky things? Isn't it more reasonable if you think you've got a lot longer to live? There's something confusing about the math there. But Stephen, would you do one of those crazy things, skydiving, or have you ever done that? I'm not sure if we've ever talked about that.
It's funny, Phil. I have a pretty bad phobia of heights, but I've flown airplanes.
Right.
It's strange. I have I can barely get on the roof of my house or climb a ladder without just completely freezing up. It's just, but you know, I can get an airplane and fly around and do accelerated stalls. It's strange how that phobia strikes. You know, so I don't know if I would be capable of leaving the airplane.
Yeah.
You know, I have a feeling that if my life depended on leaving the aircraft in flight, I might just have to die.
All right. Well, PJ, now that you've heard Brian's response, do you want to change your skydiving, bungee jumping?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good.
You know what? Suddenly, I feel like here's an interesting amendment. You know what risky thing I would definitely do if I knew the world was going to end, but I had the chance to, is, you know, take a flight. It's like if we could make an orbital or suborbital flight. I mean, orbital. You know, like a SpaceX flight or Virgin Galactica. I kind of feel like the Virgin Galactica thing, you're going to get so little for it. But I guess to see the Earth from that height and to experience weightlessness, even in these early days where it might be risky because it hasn't been done a lot of times, that's probably a risk I would take, though, because that would be too cool.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. That would be nice. And other than taking that kind of risk, Brian, are there thoughts on what you would do?
Well, similarly, I guess. God, yeah, I think that I would really. You know what? I found out that one of my best friends has cancer this year, and it's pancreatic cancer, and the prospects for that particular cancer are not very good. And I think that suddenly, right in this moment, what I'm thinking is, boy, like, there's my wife and there are the other my favorite people on the planet that I would really want to, because and even different from our family, because, you know, we all live with our immediate family. But so there are people, though, that we probably all have that are favorite people of ours that don't live in the same state as us. And it's that thing where, you know, it's always magical when you're with them, one of your best friends, and it's just like sometimes you don't see them but more than once a year or more. And I think there's some people I'd really want to spend some time with that I don't spend as much time with anymore. And as far as how I answered my thing, I actually said to work in some arts and culture references for people to check out before they die. I said that my wife and I would probably take a road trip to the ocean, serenaded by Mark Eitzel, Wilco, Old 97s, and Alejandro Esposito.
Pretty great.
That's a good plan, actually. That's well thought out.
And then we take turns reading aloud from our favorite Richard Brautigan books. Listen to waves, stare in each other's eyes, laugh, cry, and wait for the stars to go out.
Well, that's
awesome.
Can I do that in New Zealand?
Oh, yeah. In New Zealand. That's
the place for the end of the world.
Yeah.
In fact, they've already experienced the end of the world, and apparently they're all okay. All of my Kiwi friends on Facebook are giving me the thumbs up.
No, PJ, I've already explained this, but we'll go through it again. Okay, look, the Mayans are Mesoamericans. Okay, they don't care about the midnight in New Zealand. Okay, they're... Eastern time is when this thing kicks off. Okay, so that's where we've sent Brian to the East Coast to. Some would claim it should be Atlantic time, but I'm like, that's just silly. Okay, that's nobody takes that seriously. It's obviously Eastern time. So I think you guys covered all the good answers, and Brian, that was quite beautiful, the answer that you gave. So I don't have any other than trying fun things with friends and family. Here's what would be kind of cool: if the world's going to have to end anyway, if you were the only one who knew, okay? Because right, if everybody knows the world's going to end, everything just falls apart, right? It would be hard to do all these things we're talking about doing because everybody else is going to be spending time with their family and society would collapse and all that kind of thing. But if you're the only one, right, think of the massive credit card debt you could rack up, right, between now and the end of the world, right? You're the one who knows it's going to happen, right? And it's not like you're going to leave the bill with somebody else, right, because the world's going to end. So that's my contribution. I'd live very large.
What would you spend that money on?
I think travel. I would take my family on an extensive trip. We would spend some time in Southeast Asia. We have family there. We would spend some time in the South Pacific because I love it there. We would spend some time in Europe. We would travel in first class accommodations, I think.
Bill, a local car company has an ad on the TV here in Louisiana, and it says buy cars today. If the world ends on the 21st, you'll make no payments. I thought that was pretty clever. That's the whole deal. If the world really believed that, everyone in the world really believed it was going to end tomorrow, then there'd be no opportunity to rack up those credit card payments or to charge or purchase a car or anything else. It'd just all be falling apart. Nobody would have a lot to sell you one.
Yeah, so you got to be the one person with this knowledge, and then you don't tell anybody else because why scare them, right? I wouldn't want to scare anybody with that information, and you just use it accordingly. And then the other plan is that you join the team of against all odds folks who are going out there to somehow stop the world from ending. That would be pretty cool. There's a good movie in there. And of course, the answer I always give, which is I would go off my diet, right? I would really stop worrying about that completely. I think that.
Yes, we wouldn't have to worry about the consequences.
Right. I like that in Groundhog Day, where Bill Murray is like living the same day over and over, so he always starts fresh, and he says, "I don't even have to floss." It would be that kind of mindset. I would still floss. I'm not saying I wouldn't. It's just that I'm explaining the mindset. Okay, so we've got a lot more ground to cover here, but why don't we pause for a moment and let's share a few more plans from our listeners. PJ, did you have one from the list that you'd like to read out?
Oh golly, hold on.
If you don't have the list in front of you, it's okay.
You put me on the spot. How about, one moment, caller, how about Uncle Screech, who, by the way, has the best name.
Okay.
We like your name, Uncle Screech.
Yeah, good work, Uncle Screech. And what did Uncle Screech have to say about what he's going to do for
Uncle
the
Screech said, instead of yelling at the kids to get off my lawn, at 11:59 p.m., I plan to go outside, look up, and shake my fist at the asteroid of doom, trademarked, and yell at it, "You spakes rocks, stay off my lawn!" Which I thought
like
was
it.
So cute.
The defiance of that.
I love it.
Yeah.
Go space rocks.
Curmudgeonly defiance, which is...
Thank you, Uncle Screech. You put a smile on my face.
It's a great answer, Uncle Screech. You're definitely in the running. You're in the running for the...
I picture Uncle Screech as looking very much like Clint Eastwood from that recent movie of his.
Yes.
What was that? Gran Torino, right?
Gran Torino.
I picture Uncle Screech looking like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino.
That line was never more ominously delivered,
Get off my lawn.
I think about the scary old guys I heard that from when I was a kid. It was never that scary. That was... That was pissed perfect the way you did it. I have not mentioned that our grand prize this evening is a brand new iPod Nano, fully loaded with all 250-plus, what are we up to now, Stephen, about 254,
253?
Yeah,
in that neighborhood.
Yeah, editions, episodes of Fast Forward Radio, the entire series loaded on that iPod for your pleasure. There are also two second-place winners, and that prize is to be announced. It'll probably be the old Fast Forward Radio coffee mug, but we don't have the same supplier of those we used to, so we'll get back to you. Once we've announced the winners, I'll be in touch with you on the prize.
I actually thought, but of course there would be a copyright problem with this, but I thought you were about to say it was going to be loaded up with, like, apocalyptic music song. I don't even know if I can think of songs that have to do with the end of the world, but that's what I was picturing you about to say.
Well, yeah, I can think of the REM one, which we would love to have used tonight. But
it's the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah.
But I feel fine.
Yeah, all right. But we're not springing for that kind of money. I mean, you know, the iPod we felt was plenty. And plus, it's going to take a while to load all the shows on, which, by the way, I'm not doing until after Friday.
because you'd hate to waste your time.
Phil, do you
still have to pay money if you sing the song?
Actually, technically, I think we would.
Technically,
oh, damn.
Enough of it. Yeah.
Fair use would allow us to do a little.
Yeah.
But without looking the lyrics up, that's a hard one to do. I used to sing that all the time.
I used to be able to, too.
6 o'clock up, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you immediately go to blah, 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 you know. That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and planes and – no, I've already lost it. Sorry.
Good try, though.
Fair
use. Very good try.
Thank you. What I just did is certainly fair use, so we're not –
Yeah, and the more you mess it up, the more fair the use is, I think.
Yeah, at some point it becomes –
I would have messed it up real good if I'd have gone much further, so
–
Who else would like to share one of these entries? Somebody else want to read one of them?
Here's a quick one. Ted says, I don't know about you, but I'm going to party like it's 1999. So, Ted
gets
points just for being pithy, I guess.
I think that's a great answer. Does Conan still do that bit in the year 2000?
I haven't seen it lately.
He used to, you know, it got funnier and funnier as we got closer to the year 2000. And then after the year 2000, he was still making predictions for things that were going to happen in the year 2000.
Really? That's great.
Yeah, I love the idea of partying like it's 1999. You know, this is your big second chance to do that, Ted. Good for you. Good for.
Well, think about it as like an extra New Year's Eve. You know, this year. You know, you get to. That's the way to treat this one. So, yeah, Ted gets points for that.
Exactly. Now, one other finalist. I'll read this one. I'm reading the long ones. I don't know why. This was from Barbara, and she wrote, first of all, that is the Aztec calendar, not mine, referring to the photo that I had put up on the Speculous blog entry. However, we are having an end-of-the-world dinner party on the 20th with a big ham, so we can have leftovers just in case the world doesn't end. Never hurts to plan ahead. And I think that's a really practical approach to the end of the world. You know, just in case the world doesn't end, you got some ham leftovers, which I like. Although I would say that the chances of somebody who called us out on putting the wrong picture up winning are pretty remote, Barbara. Sorry, bad luck.
Bad form.
Yeah, it may be the end of the world, but we're still pretty small when it comes to things like that. Yeah,
you know. First of all, it was listed as a Mayan calendar on Wikimedia, okay, and I really can't tell the difference. So. But the one we have up there, I understand, actually is a Mayan calendar. And if somebody wants to set me straight on that, just let me know, and don't expect that we're going to give you anything, okay? Okay, so where do we go next? I wanted to talk a little bit about swinging back around to the subject of the end of the world. We've talked a little bit about why that's so important to people, or why it stays on their mind so much. As people who are interested in the future, is this a topic that we seriously should be thinking about? How much of our thinking should be about the things that could be, as we like to describe them in more serious circles, the existential threats to humanity? Should that make up a larger part of our thinking? Should we be taking more serious steps to prevent those kinds of things? Brian, what do you think?
I think there are certain threats that we absolutely should be, you know, we talk about them a lot, but we're not doing anything about, which, like the climate. Not only climate change, the thing that gets me about the climate change issue is that there's this framing thing going on where people have kept insisting that you can't prove anthropogenic, man-caused global warming. And, you know, first of all, I think the case for it is really strong, and in the estimation of people that are experts in this field, which I am not, but who I trust. But better than that, more importantly, is that we're clearly spewing billions of tons of poison into our air supply. So, okay, yes, it's probably causing global warming, but even short of that, it's clearly not good for us to be breathing all this stuff and drinking all this stuff. So, yeah, I think that that a very likely scenario is we, as George Carlin said, like, the planet's not going anywhere. We are. And he said some very beautiful stuff on this subject that, you know, the planet will be fine in all likelihood, but we could render it less habitable for a species such as ourselves.
Yeah. So what do we do? What's your recommended course of action?
Party like it's 1999.
We're doing that already.
Yeah. Okay. This is helping.
That's the problem.
I feel like the earth is healing because of this show, okay? I just want to say. We're doing our part.
Be easy, but clearly, like, you know what, I've always had this fantasy too, that I wish the big energy companies, the oil companies, would lead the way into alternative technologies, renewable technologies. And if they did, they would not only be heroes, absolutely be heroes for doing it, but they could completely maintain their position of power and wealth, which is what's important to them, I guess. So if they lead the way, because if they don't, some little startup is going to do it. If they remain stuck in their ways, someone's going to beat them to it. If they lead the way, they could be heroes as well as maintain their wealth and power. So I that would just be, you know, I would actually like to see that. Or I would rather see them get beat by some wily, fast-moving startups, and that's probably more likely because it doesn't seem like – I think we've seen their inertia.
Yeah, you get legacy in those big companies to the point that they can't really do that. British Petroleum, they like to pretend now that their initials stand for Beyond Petroleum, and that they're thinking beyond petroleum to do other things. I'm with you. I think that if we get green energy, it'll probably come from small startups.
Although oil companies have been putting money into algae research and some of these, I think that it's more a matter of they just have a hard time breaking out of the gasoline paradigm, the petroleum paradigm. I mean, they really see it in those terms. If you give them something that's more similar to that, then they deal with it conceptually better. But when you start talking about things like wind and solar, it's just, you know, or like wave energy or something like that, it's so far outside of their realm that they don't know what to do with it. Well, PJ, I know you've got to chime in on environment.
But yeah, my opinion, sadly, of this specific thing you're talking about is that, you know, many of the companies actually have decent-sized divisions working in renewables and sustainable energy. The problem is their financial obligation is to see out to the last dime they can squeeze out of an established infrastructure. So if you're actually talking from a business standpoint, their obligation to their shareholders is not to jump into renewables because that eliminates the ability to continue a payout from their pre-existing infrastructure. And they're going to milk that until the last dime. So that's the sad truth. And that's why I'm hoping that startups do bite them in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad that there's some, that those are our priorities.
What were you going to say, Stephen?
I was just going to say that, and I agree completely with what PJ just said. I'd also say that we got a bit of a problem with the mere fact that gasoline is just such a good store of energy. It's hard to get the same amount of energy out of anything else presently with our present technology. I think that things like algae and what Craig Venter is working on, that will be awesome if we can produce liquid fuel that way, in most part because it'll be carbon neutral. You know, it has to take up carbon as part of the production process, and so when it releases carbon, when it's burned, it's neutral. That would be the ideal solution, but it's taking time, obviously.
It's harder to do. It's harder to get the same amount of energy per gallon, right? Doing it any other way, and so
right.
it's like electricity going to ground. I mean, it's just, well, the money's there, and you got to get the money. I mean, that's kind of where the somebody told me once years ago the three laws of the oil business. And it seems to be true for a lot of businesses, but it was introduced to me as the three laws of the oil business, and they are: one, get the money; two, get the money; three, get the money. Right. So, I think that's probably a paradigm that's difficult to shake out of. But swinging it back around, let's talk about the broader question, which is, should we be concerned about these existential risks? PJ, what's your take on that?
Oh, absolutely. And as Brian said, there's some that we really can do something about as a culture. Some are a little more difficult. Asteroid hitting us. I think it would be nice to have an asteroid plan. Then we get to, reenact that not-so-great Michael Bay movie. But, there's appropriately called Armageddon.
There you go.
There you go. I think that, there's some things where it would be nice to have a plan, other things where we could be quite active about, like climate change. Also, it would be nice to start thinking through things like super viruses. The good thing is that there are groups thinking through a lot of these scenarios. And, it's also great to know that we've got entire institutions like our friends, Nick Bostrom and Andrew Sandberg with the Future of Humanity Institute doing existential risk forecasting, which is fantastic. So there are people who do think about this. I certainly know there are lots of scenario building groups within a variety of levels of government. But some of it, it's wonderful to think about it. It's wonderful to say we should have these people working on this. Sometimes the political will isn't necessarily there, and that means no bucks, no Buck Rogers.
All right. Well, there are some people who have looked at it so hard and who think about it so carefully that, and it's about people I know personally, they're just no fun anymore. you know what I mean? They've assessed the risks, and it produces kind of a gloomy outlook. And it's interesting within kind of the more future aware community, the broad range of perspectives people have on how things are likely to turn out. But certainly there are those who think that if we survive at all, it's going to be a really lucky break on our part.
Mm-hmm.
That we're up against so many potentially self-inflicted ways of wiping ourselves out, primarily through things like artificial intelligence and nanotechnology and viruses and those kinds of things, that it's just going to be a matter of dodging, not a bullet, but just a hailstorm of bullets for us to for us to make it through the next few decades or the next couple of centuries. So I personally, I'm not in that camp. But one of the things we do on the show is we always talk about Pareto analysis. You know, you get 80% of the results from 20% of the effort, and we spend probably about 80% of our time talking about how great everything is and how good stuff's going to be, and we try to spend at least 20% of our time talking about what are the downsides, what are the potential risks, what are the things we have to worry about. But it's hard to get your head around those kinds of things. What do you think, Stephen? Are we thinking about the end of the world enough, or do we need to spend more time thinking about it?
I think the best way to defend against most existential risks is to just hit the accelerator on our development of all sorts of technologies. PJ's thought that no bucks, no Buck Rogers. I think to protect against that particular risk of like an asteroid impact or something like that, it'd be great if we had a whole industry of asteroid miners. If we're already up there doing work, making money by bringing in precious metals or rare earth elements or whatever from the asteroid belt, then we've got the infrastructure to deal with a problem if we had something that was coming. But if we were faced with something heading our way now, we'd have to scramble, and I don't know that we'd necessarily would have the time to do that. So I think being there would be an excellent way to avoid that particular risk, and I think you could apply that kind of analysis to a lot of the other risks as well. Developing as fast as we can to have the technology to deal with whatever comes.
Well, I love that answer, but if some of my gloomier friends were here, they would say that when you step on the accelerator with all those technologies, you're accelerating potentially the thing that's going to wipe us out.
Correct. You're also accelerating the defenses to the problems that the technology brings. And you can't stop it. If we choose to say, well, we're just not going to develop nanotech in the United States anymore, then it goes somewhere else. And guess what? If somebody then wanted to use that kind of technology against our country, then we wouldn't have the defense to deal with it. So, screw relinquishment. That doesn't work. We've got to be – we need to be at the forefront of everything.
Okay. Now, Brian, PJ, I'm going to give you both a chance to respond to Stephen's bold step on the accelerator plan, but first we have to note that it is past midnight Eastern time. Brian, any signs of the apocalypse occurring where you are?
No signs, but I have to admit I'm in a basement of a house. So I might not be in the best position to observe.
Were you hedging your bets?
No, it's just later here, and some people are asleep. So I'm trying to be downstairs and away from them. But if it worked out
in a Manhattan high rise, okay? We were really kind of hoping to have you there, that you would see it, the big waves sweeping.
Right. I mean, what kind of Mayan apocalypse is this if all you had to do was be in a basement to survive it?
Well, I'm kind of pleased to hear that because I'm in the basement right now myself. But
I think you're safe.
Yeah, I'm just to be sure, I'm going to get my family and bring them down here too. So far, I'm not going to declare we're out of the woods yet because the show's got a while to go on yet.
Right.
But so far, you're not hearing anything, smelling anything, no loud
nothing
sound
at all. No.
All right. Peter, you're coastal, so just in case you're not hearing anything.
I'm the last to go, guys.
Stephen's
next, then you fill in the mountains.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
we've got one in every time zone.
Yeah.
Well, I'm here in the central time zone, and I'm brave enough to be on the second floor. So,
okay.
Wow. So far, so good here. So,
are you facing water?
I'll
I think
you,
you should be looking out towards the towards the Gulf there.
You could say, well, the reason I'm on the second floor is to avoid the rising water. Yeah, no, so far no rising water that I can tell. So,
okay, all right.
Well, my street is an official tsunami evacuation zone. Does that count?
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
That shows that, you know, you've been taking existential risk seriously. That you would position yourself there. Well, I can report from here in Colorado that in the next room, it sounds like my Shih Tzu is having a bad dream. So this could be.
That's a sign. It's a sign.
This could mean something. Later on, he and I will have a chat, and maybe he'll tell me that the dates were off by a few years, and we'll have another show. I don't know. But we'll have to make what sense of it we can. We're going to come back. I really want to get everyone's perspective on Stephen's idea that we accelerate technological development in order to avoid existential risk. But before we do, we've still got, I think, three or four more of our entries into our competition here. So I'm going to read one. I'm going to read one from Ken KC, who is a regular and frequent and prolific participant in our chat room. And I got to say, Ken, I absolutely love your answer. He says, I'm going to lock myself in the bathroom and tether my body to a dozen airbags.
What's he supposed to achieve with that? Is he going to he's headed up?
I just like the image, you know. I'm not sure about tethering. I think you would want to surround your body with a dozen airbags.
Yeah.
And that would be my that would be my only critique of your otherwise, I think, eloquent answer. But, you know, the idea of some huge shock hits and then boom, 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 all these airbags go off, right? Then you're completely safe. Ken, ingenious answer, I have to say. Of all of them, I feel like you were really putting your head around, you know, how to prevent being wiped out in the end of the world. I actually think you would probably do an awful lot of damage to your body with those airbags, but it's just a great answer. What else? Who else wants to share one with us?
Well, I'll tell you one that I definitely, this is not how I would choose to spend my time. It's that last one from Eva Petakovic, that I will be gleefully browsing comments on the outrageous apocalypse theory Facebook pages I have collected over the past month. It will be a fine day for internet tourism, and I've got snacks in a front row seat. I appreciate it as a comment, but I don't think I'll be browsing internet pages about the apocalypse personally.
Yeah, that's you know, that's a lot of trouble to go through. Although we are going to quite a bit of trouble having the program tonight, so I feel like I'm living in a glass house by giving Eva too hard of a time about her interest in the
truth.
What do you think, Stephen? You're going to be hitting Facebook pretty hard tomorrow to see what the people have to say about the end of the world.
Well, I've kind of been watching it. It seems like most of my Facebook friends are having a good time with it. There's one thing that's been passed around, a little cartoon with this Mayan calendar maker. You know, he's got this calendar shaped like a wheel in front of him with the Mayan writing on it, and says, I only have room to go up to 2012. And the Mayan chieftain standing next to him says, oh, that's going to freak some people out. And anyway, yeah, it seems like everybody's having a good time with it.
Yeah, well, that's funny. But once again, you know, obviously the author is not familiar with the whole Dresden Codex. And, you know, I don't mean to keep showing off my expertise, but I did watch about half of that movie before I fell asleep. So I need to keep coming back to that. How about you, PJ? Is this a source of entertainment to you, something that you've been tracking, will continue to look into?
I've had my wee bit of fun changing the top banner of my page to a photo of Bill Nye that says "The End Is."
I like that.
I think that's about as far as I go. I don't think I seek anybody else anything else out.
You know, that's only funny to those of us who know him.
But it was awesome. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that one took me longer than it should have. I looked at that, and I'm like, the end is the science guy. The end is Bill. What? I don't get it. She's saying. Okay. All right. One more. Somebody else want to read off one of those?
I'll take Christy. Christy says, I plan to spend the end of the world immersed in wine and dark chocolate, perhaps with a croissant to round it out, and a steak rare as a midday break. I love that. I love that attitude, particularly the dark chocolate. That's kind of got a Mesoamerican flavor to it, and I think that's a great plan. That's a great
Lion
plan.
There. And yeah. Ken, doesn't that really sound better than the airbags when you think about it, huh? Come on, Ken. But okay, so those are all our contestants, and we'll come back and announce the winner a little bit later. But I did want to pick it up back to the subject of preventing the end of the world, being concerned about the end of the world, and Stephen's idea that we go damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead with technology as a means of preventing some of these bad things from happening. Brian, how do you feel about that idea?
Well, I have to admit, I'm part of it. I can't really give an answer except to say, yeah, I do think it's some pretty tough issue when you're discussing some things in biotech, synthetic biology, and manipulating viruses. And if indeed, in the same way that, you know, a couple decades ago, it was people playing with computers. And today, you know, programming computers, that if we're going to put the tools for programming DNA in people's hands in a very fast approaching decade, it's a little frightening of what people could do with those tools. But the other side of it, as Stephen said, is that, you know, any one country that opts out for some sort of ethical reason, you know, everyone's not going to opt out. So what are you going to do? You have to have the tools to be very familiar with this to go to battle with that sort of thing. I think it's very – so there are some issues here I think that they are scary, whether it's nanotech or I come to – it's the synthetic biology one that I think there's some legitimate cause for alarm, but you can't sit it out. It's a tough one. You can push – you might be ushering it on by pushing forward, but it's going to push forward anyway. But on the other hand, something like near-Earth asteroids, that, I think, that's something that we're not bringing it on. It's something that is inevitable. Stuff has been hitting the Earth forever, and eventually something is going to hit the Earth again. And we could do more on that, but work is being done. I mean, there's budgetary reasons for not doing enough, but NASA is concerned about that as well.
But actually, if you look at that one, that's the case for full steam ahead, right?
That's full steam ahead because we're not causing it at all, and it would be nice. First of all, for many reasons, I'd like to see us become a multi-planet species and develop in our space program and private space. So, and a small part of that would be the ability to deal with a threat.
Absolutely. Okay. How about it, PJ? You get to bring us home on this one. Is it time to pull out the stops and develop technology like there's no tomorrow to ensure that there will be a tomorrow?
I have to agree with Brian that it's not a one-size-fits-all answer. That I do have certain fears with biotechnology that I don't have with other technologies, and maybe I'm simply naive. But, for instance, there are energy technologies, as we discussed before, I would love to see more, even more money thrown at. For instance, I recently went on a tour of the National Ignition Facility at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories and saw the Laser Inertial Fusion Energy System, the LIFE system, which, as Brad Templeton says, and I credit him with this line, it is the perfect place to kill James Bond. It looks like the greatest Bond set you've ever seen. Basically, it's like 192 lasers all aimed at a single point inside of what is, in essence, a giant sphere. You can kind of imagine them dangling Bond, you know, at the intersection point. But they believe that they are mere months away from what's referred to as ignition, which is where you produce more energy. The system produces more energy than it's putting in. But they're being starved because the system is used primarily by the Department of Defense, and they're not too interested in this whole fusion thing. So, and there's nobody on Capitol Hill that's taken an interest in it because, well, fusion, is it real? Who knows? I don't want to put my name on it if it's not real yet. So this poor system is languishing, and it could be the single biggest change in the history of humanity. And yet,
and yet,
it may be completely shut down in the next year because it's got no government love. So I look at systems like that, and I'm beside myself. Here we've got something that every country in the world wants to try to replicate. We've taken it farther than any country in the world, and yet here we are stuck. I would throw so much money at that, and I know they've thrown over the last 25 years, 30. Well, actually, it actually was thought of 50 years ago, and I'm going to make a little connection to my hometown here. In 1960, the first laser was fired here in Malibu, California, at the Hughes Research Lab.
I believe aimed at James Bond, if I'm not mistaken.
I think actually aimed at Santa Monica, but don't tell them. And within a month of that happening, a scientist at Lawrence Livermore said to himself, wait a second, what if we took a bunch of those lasers? What kind of energy could we produce that might create fusion? I mean, how's that for a out-of-the-box, there's not even a box, there's not even a room with a box, thinking? And they've been working on it ever since. So here they are so close. And yet, because it hasn't happened yet, people doubt it might happen. I'd still be throwing no money at it, even if it wasn't going to happen. I'd still be throwing money at this thing.
You know, I've got to believe that if it's that close and if it's that good an idea, right? I mean, it can't just die, right? It can't just go away. I mean, it's all been recorded. They've been keeping track, right? It's almost kind of scary to think that that we could be on the brink of something like that and walk away from it, isn't it?
Oh, it's terrifying. The flip side of that is artificial general intelligence, which is, it's actually the flip side. It's the adjacent side, actually, where we don't really have a lot of government-funded research here in the U.S., but, boy, China's really great at taking European and American scientists and inviting them to China and giving them money and labs and, please, invent artificial general intelligence for us. Mm-hmm. So that worries me a little bit.
Especially some of the people we've sent over, not to name.
Yeah, we know them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ben Gerstle, right?
Can I ask you to elaborate on that, PJ? Just so, what do you fear about them developing that technology for someone else? Then how do you?
It's one
of
those things where we talked about where Stephen talked about. You don't want one place developing it all by itself. You want this kind of technology to have a relatively even distribution, because again, it would cause tremendous disequilibrium within cultures. Something like, for instance, like fusion. The irony with the fusion technology is that they would be happy to spread this all over the world. And the governments all over the world have their hands up.
Mm-hmm.
They would be thrilled to do that because it would, in many ways, change the face of geopolitics.
Oh, yeah.
In a good way.
Very good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of very interesting things that could percolate from that. But if only one very large country has artificial general intelligence, I don't see that ending too well.
Well, I think when you think about something like think about fusion, any of these really high opportunity areas. I mean, you look at the great steps forward that China's taking in solar power. It's I mean, part of the answer is because this is America, damn it. But you know, the more serious answer is, well, you know, we still want to be an economically viable and important country, right? We're not going to be if we're lagging in these things,
right?
And then there's the whole we want to stop the world from ending side of it too, which I think is also important. Well, okay, we're 20 minutes after midnight, Brian. I have not heard any rattling, shaking, moaning, explosions.
Nothing.
I'm going to call it. Gang, I'm going to call it. The apocalypse has not occurred, okay? I think...
Was there a time on this or just a date?
Actually, there is. Some smarty pants that I went to high school with put on my Facebook that we're doing this at the wrong time, that it's actually supposed to happen at 6:20 Eastern time.
6:20? Where do we get that number?
6:20 p.m. I don't know. You know, Dresden Codex, I suppose. So actually, we're not off the hook for another, what is that? It's midnight there now. It's 18 hours. But
so we can still all go skydiving and listen to our favorite music and et cetera.
Rack up your credit card bills, the whole thing.
Right.
You have my permission, except for the fact that I have called it and said that there's officially no apocalypse. Now, we're gonna have to wrap this up here fairly quickly. I want to give both of you a chance just to tell us what else you got going on in your lives. But before we do, I want to give the results of our competition. And we have two second-place finishers. One of those was Ted, who mm-hmm. wrote, I don't know about you, but I'm going to party like it's 1999. Congratulations, Ted. That answer has won you a prize to be announced, probably a coffee mug. And the other one is Uncle Screech, who said, instead of yelling at the kids to get off my lawn at 11:59 p.m., I plan to go outside, look up, and shake my fist at the asteroid of doom, trademark, and yell at it, you space rocks, stay off my lawn. That's a great answer, and that will also be getting you a coffee mug. But our big winner, drum roll please, is Carl Finley, who wrote, I won't be wasting any money on Christmas presents this year. So, Carl, We gave you a hard time about your Scrooge-like answer, and yet you're the big winner of the iPod, so congratulations, Carl. And congratulations to us all for living to see another day. I'm pretty psyched about that. So very quickly, Brian, what's going on lately in your life? Any interesting things happening over the next few weeks that we should be aware of?
Yeah, well, this has been a huge year for me. I got married. I moved from San Francisco to Raleigh, North Carolina to work in science communications at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, which has been it's been a very cool and exciting year. Coming up a little farther than that, I've been contributing to a TV show that they just announced. The first episode is going to air February 28th. It's on the Weather Channel. It's called Hacking the Planet. And my friend John Rennie, who's a former editor-in-chief of Scientific American, is the host. And me and Kara Santamaria from the Huffington Post, he checks in with us. We're kind of like his peanut gallery or something. Like, throughout the show, he checks in with us. So he goes and learns a lot about hacking earthquakes, hacking tornadoes, et cetera, like hacking different phenomenon, trying to understand them. And then he has us weigh in on them. Just like this might have been a Hacking the Mayan Apocalypse episode.
I got it. Okay, that sounds great. Well, congratulations on the year you've had, and that sounds exciting. We'll have to have you back on sometime in the near future. You can tell us a little bit about that show. PJ, what's going on with you? We're getting closer and closer to this book show we're going to be doing with you. Is that right?
Yes, you are, gentlemen. The book is completed. It is now going into production. And you will be getting copies very soon of The Country's Club.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we're looking forward to reading those, and we're looking forward to having you back on to talk about those in the future when we'll, you know, be doing additional programs because the world hasn't ended. So on that note, Stephen, would you agree with me when I say that a fast-forward radio could not be any better than the one we've done this evening?
This is a good way to kind of round up a certain era, isn't it?
Well, it is. And in fact, we said there was going to be a big announcement about the future of the show this evening, and it truly is the end of the world as we know it. This is the final edition of Fast Forward Radio. This is the end of the line for Fast Forward Radio tonight. This is our final show, and we will be retiring The Speculist as a blog in addition to that, not just because we did such a great show tonight and we've done so much stellar blogging at The Speculist, but because we've decided to combine the two efforts into a commonly branded property, and that will be The World Transformed. So beginning January 2nd, our program will be entitled The World Transformed. Obviously, that's a title we've used before for our special series in the past. And our blog will be called The World Transformed, and you'll find it, guess where, at worldtransformed.com. So the end of the world, PJ, as you said, truly the beginning. It's the step into a wonderful new era, and we're very excited about it, looking forward to it, and we're going to have a lot more to tell everyone about it over the next few weeks to come. It's going to be the same show, but it's going to be a little bit different in many ways that we'll be making clear. And this is in response to actually a lot of feedback that we got from all of you listening over the past few months doing our anniversary shows. So we're extremely excited. We're very proud of the show that we've done. We're saying a fond farewell here to Fast Forward Radio and looking forward to talking with you all as the world continues next year. With The World Transformed. So thank you very much to our guests. Thanks to everyone who listened this evening. And Stephen, what is our music for the final Fast Forward Radio?
Well, I wanted to do some music that from the past of the show that would be appropriate for the theme of this evening. And so I stood ready with two different songs. One was World War Z. Okay, about the zombie apocalypse, obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't think
good.
I'm going to play that one tonight. I think since we're past midnight on the East Coast and things seem to be going pretty well.
Wait, can I guess before you say? Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead. What's your
Cave Girls. Cave Girls?
Well, you know, I was ready with Cave Girls, but actually what I want to play is A Glorious Dawn.
Oh, fantastic.
And,
okay.
Perfect. Yeah, with this is the Carl Sagan song.
Yeah.
It's kind of the mashup. And so I thought we'd play
Melody
that.
Sheet.
That's right.
There we go. All right. So Carl Sagan is gonna take us out once again. Thanks, PJ. Thanks, Brian. Stephen, thanks for all you do on the program. All of our great contestants in the prize giveaway, and everyone participating in the chat room. Thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We look forward to being with you again on The World Transformed. And until then, live to see it.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try. If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Space is filled with a network of wormholes. You might emerge somewhere else in space. Some went out in time.
The sky calls to us. We do not destroy ourselves. We will one day venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits. Not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way.
I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, in which we float like a mote of dust in the morning sky. But the brain does much more than just recollect. It intercompares, synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions.
The simplest thought
quick, the concept of the number one has an elaborate logical underpinning. The brain has its own language, testing the structure and consistency of the world. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way. The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars.
For thousands of years, people have wondered about the universe. Did it stretch out forever, or was there a limit? From the Big Bang to black holes, from dark matter to a possible Big Crunch, our image of the universe today is full of strange-sounding ideas.
How lucky we are to live in this time, the first moment in human history when we are, in fact, visiting other worlds. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way.
The surface of the Earth is the shore of the cosmic ocean. Recently we've waded a little way up, and the water seems inviting.